wouldn't settle for a house with a less than solid foundation, yet you might be neglecting a key ingredient for a solid spiritual foundation, even on the day bearing its name. Learn how to make Thanksgiving a habit year-round, not merely a tired tradition each November. Stay tuned for Grace to You Weekend. Less than 2 weeks, the holiday season, here in the United States at least, begins in earnest with our annual Thanksgiving celebration. Yet for Christians, Thanksgiving could, actually should, be every day of the year. To find out why it is an all-year attitude, stay tuned now for Grace to You Weekend, as John MacArthur brings a lesson called Giving Thanks for Redemption. John, before we get to your lesson, there are some friends of this ministry that you'd like to say a special word of thanks to. It's hard to imagine where Grace to You would be without these folks.
Yeah, we'd be nowhere, Carl. I'd be talking to myself here if it weren't for faithful folks that the Lord uses to sustain this ministry. We have no words to say thank you for the gifts of faithful listeners to Grace to You. And those who download our messages on the website, or who purchase books or CDs or whatever resources we provide, it is humbling to receive your gifts and to realize that God has put it in your heart to support us, that the Lord is using you to sustain this ministry. That's a joy for us. That's affirmation that God is honoring His Word. We rejoice in that. And it's a joy for us to know that He's using you because you're getting the blessing of that usefulness. We are so grateful that you want to be involved in the lives of others all around the world who hear the Bible teaching ministry of Grace to You, or read the books, or download the sermons, or see us on television. We're so grateful that you believe in this ministry, you trust this ministry, and you enable this ministry to continue. In a sense, God has placed our lives and our ministry into your hands. You determine what we're able to do. Thank you for being so faithful. Thank you for your notes, your letters, your cards, your emails. Keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing. We depend on it.
Friend, thank you for remembering the next few weeks are crucial for us financially. You can help us start 2013 on a strong financial footing by supporting us before the end of the year. Again, thanks for whatever you're able to do. And now, looking ahead to the Thanksgiving celebration coming up in the United States, here's John with a timely look at giving thanks for redemption.
When I think about salvation in an Old Testament context, I'm so often drawn to Psalm 107. And I confess that I am stuck on this psalm. It is a glorious psalm. It has a special significance to me because one of the most startling and one of the most amazing and one of the most God-glorifying conversions that has ever happened in this church and in my life occurred after I read this psalm. I didn't preach on it. I just read it, closed the Bible, sat down, and never referred to it again. There was a young man sitting over in this area that Sunday morning who was one of the leaders of the gay and lesbian community in Los Angeles, a well-known and admired leader in that movement, also dying of AIDS. And he had said to somebody in Hollywood, in his environment, I'm afraid to die, and I don't know what to do about it. I need help. And whoever this person was said, you need to go to a place called Grace Community Church. And he did. And I read Psalm 107, and he was just literally shattered to the very core of his being. And he was a heap of brokenness and tears and sadness and joy all mingled together, because that psalm says there is a God who breaks the chains and sets the prisoner free. And he said to me later, he said, then you got up and you talked and you kept preaching and preaching and you just kept going. And I kept saying, why doesn't that guy shut up so I can get down there and find out how this can happen in my life? And so finally I shut up, and he came down here and was just totally transformed and revolutionized. And I had the privilege of baptizing that young man, and he had an incredible testimony in that world before he died. So this psalm is precious to me because it's a psalm of salvation. As much as any part of the Old Testament, it puts us in touch with how people in the Old Testament were saved. It's just a profound, profound psalm. And it's really all about praise. Worship and praise and honor to God is really a matter of thanking God. To help us express this, I want us to look at this incredible psalm. It calls us to the worship of God through thanksgiving for our salvation. This wonderful psalm was sung by the Jews, especially to thank God for redeeming His people from threatening disaster and death. It was used in a myriad of ways in the vicissitudes and struggles and sorrows of life. At times of disaster and times of death, this was the psalm of thanks for deliverance. It provides a rich picture of the divine work of redemption, the divine work of restoration, particularly in regard to the redemption and restoration of Israel by the mercy and goodness of God. The opening verses are a summons to thank God. Verse 1 says, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom He has redeemed from the hand of the enemy and gathered out of the lands from the east and from the west, from the north and from the south." In that summation rehearses all of the deliverances of Israel from every direction. The psalm was most likely written after the exile in Babylon. It perhaps then looks especially at the Babylonian exile, the redemption of the people of God from their Babylonian captivity. And while that may be in some ways its most poignant reference, it is certainly not limited to that. In fact, it provides general pictures of God's redemption of Old Testament saints and as well of God's redemption even of us. It is applicable to all who have been redeemed from sin. I'm fairly sure that this psalm was used for worship, particularly by the Jews who returned from Babylon to rebuild their city and rebuild the wall and rebuild the nation. Perhaps this psalm was even sung at the first Feast of Tabernacles that Ezra 3 says was celebrated right after they returned. The key phrase there in verse 2 is, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." Those who have been redeemed are the ones who ought to be praising God and thanking God. Those who have been redeemed are those who can genuinely sing the song of thanksgiving for God's goodness and God's mercy to them. Goodness and mercy is the theme of the song, and it's the theme of the life of one who has tasted its sweetness and been invited to sing praises to a redeeming God. And as I said, it's not just Israel's song, it's our song. For we have been redeemed by mercy and by the goodness of God. And we have every right to sing this same song. As you look at it, you see four illustrations of God's redemption. They're just very lovely, very magnificent, and yet simple pictures. Four pictures of God's redemption. First, in verses 4 to 9, God's redemption is like a lost caravan finding a safe city. Secondly, from verses 10 to 16, God's redemption is like a captive prisoner being set free. Thirdly, in verses 17 to 22, God's redemption is like a sick person having found health. And finally, in verses 23 to 32, God's redemption is like a doomed sailor being rescued from certain death in a storm. Each of these poignant graphic analogies illustrates the blessedness of God's redemption. Perhaps we can envision a large throng of worshipers filling the court of the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem and ready to offer thanks to God for their restoration. And in that vast multitude, One of the groups might consist of the leaders of caravans who had been stranded in the wilderness on their way to the holy city. Another group might be made up of those who had been prisoners and been set free. Another might be made up of those who had suffered the terrible pangs of sickness and had risen from the bed of sickness in recovery. And perhaps there were some there who had suffered the dangers of shipwreck and been spared. And those are the pictures here, and they're graphic. This is also, from the theological standpoint, a clear picture of how it was that a person in the Old Testament came to salvation. It was when they realized that they were lost. When they realized that they were prisoners. When they realized that they were sick. And when they realized that they were doomed to disaster. When they realized that they couldn't keep the law of holy God. They couldn't love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. They were disobedient. They were rebellious. They were wayward. They saw the true lostness of their soul, the true imprisonment of their spirit. They realized the sickness of their sinfulness and the doom that awaited them. And they came to God and cried out. Now, each of these four pictures falls into the same pattern. The psalmist follows a sequence here. First, there is the predicament. Then there is the petition. Then there is the pardon. And then there is the praise. The predicament is the dangerous situation described. The petition is the cry for deliverance from that danger. The pardon is the merciful deliverance provided. And the praise is the call to thanks that follows. Our own redemption from sin is imaged in these magnificent analogies. We too are like people lost in the wilderness, locked in prison, languishing in deadly sickness, and life threatened on a storm-tossed sea. This picture then is not only of the redeemed of the Old Testament, but us as well. Let's start with the first picture. It's very, very clear. That of being lost in a wilderness. Verse 4. They wandered in the wilderness in a desolate way. They found no city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted in them. There's the predicament. There is the predicament. Restless, lost sinners without resources, starved and thirsty, wandering hopelessly in a trackless desert, aimlessly looking for a city which can provide food and water, rest and safety. Obviously, this could well depict Israel in the 40-year wandering in the wilderness when they came out of Egypt, wandering restlessly and aimlessly, roaming around in a wasteland, a howling desert between Egypt and Canaan, where they all eventually died under divine judgment. It also surely could be used to describe the terrible plight of Israel in the land of Babylon, lost as a nation, diffused into a pagan culture in a religious desert of godlessness at the very point of perishing. Could also describe us, any troubled, destitute, forlorn, lost soul wandering aimlessly in the barrenness of sin without the soul supplying spiritual bread and water of life. That's how sinners are. They wander looking for a city, someplace where there's water, someplace where there's food, where there's provision and joy and fellowship and rest and security and safety from the ever-present and impending death. That leads to the petition in verse 6. This point, psalmist says, then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. People ask me all the time, how were people in the Old Testament saved when they realized their spiritual condition and cried out to the Lord? That's how. They cried out to the Lord in their distresses. Israel certainly cried to the Lord in Egypt. They cried to the Lord in Babylon. They're beseeching God for redemption from bondage and redemption from barrenness. They told God of their famished and a serious plight and condition. And they illustrate, really, sinners of all times who recognize their failure to keep the law of God, who recognize their lostness, their aimlessness, who recognize their deprived and their depraved and dangerous condition. They recognize that they are wandering aimlessly from place to place and job to job and marriage to marriage and experience to experience and never finding any lasting satisfaction. And they desperately want to find their way to an inhabited city of safety and peace and tranquility and satisfaction. They're really looking, according to Hebrews 11:10, for a city whose builder and maker is God. A city that has foundations. It's not transient. This is where the sinner has to come, to a desperate sense of need. The Old Testament person saw the law of God and saw that he or she couldn't keep it and recognized the desperate condition, recognized the alienation from God, recognized that there was impending death on the horizon, and cried out to God in a condition of lostness. Like sinners of any day who realize that the whole world is a barren wasteland, a vast, empty desert, stark and deadly, who become desperate enough and hungry enough and thirsty enough and pained enough and frightened enough to call out to God for a way to a city with limitless resources, provisions, rest, security, and satisfaction. And verse 6 says, this is so wonderful, and he delivered them out of their distresses, and he led them forth by the right way, that they might go to a city for a dwelling place. When Israel called to God, he heard them, and he delivered them. And he led them to a right way. Actually, the Hebrew is a straight way. Literally means a road without humps and bumps and curves and turns. An easy road. The grace of salvation makes it an easy way. The journey is depicted as a straight way. An easy way. God provided goodness and mercy and grace. And it was him who did all the work. All we had to do was receive it. Well, the petition leads to the pardon, and the pardon then leads to the praise in verses 8 and 9. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for His goodness and for His wonderful works to the children of men, for He satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness. What could more deserve the praise and thanks of God's people than that they are safely on their way to the heavenly city? The second picture here is also lovely. Picture. It's a picture of being liberated from a prison, lost in a wilderness, and secondly, locked in a prison. Verse 10. Here's the imagery very clearly. Those who sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, bound in affliction and irons. Now, there is a picture of a prisoner in a dungeon, in the darkness, in the shadow of death. People in those kinds of places died from the filth of those places, chained in iron chains that created tremendous suffering. They were there, verse 11 says, and here's the key, because they rebelled against what? The words of God. And they had despised the counsel of the Most High. Therefore, He brought down their heart with labor. They fell down and there was none to help. The sinner not only looked at his life and recognized the aimlessness and the lostness and the hopelessness and the insecurity and the fears and the lack of satisfaction and the hunger of heart and the thirst. And Jesus talked about that in the Beatitudes, didn't he? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. The sinner not only understands the aimlessness and the hopelessness and the despair and the emptiness, but he also understands that he is imprisoned as a result of a violation of God's law, as a result of rebellion against the counsel of God, as a result of rebellion against the Word of God. When Israel was in Egypt and when Israel was in Babylon, more recently, the experience was like an imprisonment, and they had really no hope of freedom. They were there because of rebellion. They were there because of disobedience. They were, as it were, chained in the darkness and gloom of that pagan place. They were like people in a dungeon, a stinking, smelly, filthy dungeon on death row, awaiting either execution or death from the conditions, without light and without hope. This calamitous situation was brought on by rebellion against the law of God, by sin. And in the Old Testament, it was that. The sinner not only had to come to the realization of his lostness and his insecurity and his aimlessness and his pointlessness, but the fact that he had to come to grips with the fact that he had violated God, that he had broken God's law, that he had rebelled against God, and a righteous God had sentenced him literally to a prison of judgment. This is how it was for Israel. They were taken into captivity in Babylon because of their rebellion. The prophets made that very clear. Read the first part of Zechariah. They had despised everything God said. Isaiah said the same thing in Isaiah chapter 5. He said, you have despised the words of the Lord. That's why you're going into captivity. The sinner has to come to the recognition of this. And in the Old Testament, that's where the sinner who would come to God would come. Come to the realization that he had rebelled against God and that he was in the prison of his own sin, sentenced to damnation. He would come to the recognition of his spiritual imprisonment. And that leads to the petition in verse 13. They cried out to the Lord in their trouble. That's where they come. That's where the sinner has to come. It's the same as verse 6. They cried out to the Lord in their trouble. The same exact pattern. And then you go from the petition to the pardon in verse 13. And the same immediate reaction. And he saved them out of their distresses. Jesus said it this way, him that comes unto me, I'll in no wise what? Cast out. And he saved them out of their distresses. And he brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death and broke their chains in pieces. That is glorious, isn't it?
That's John MacArthur, president of the Master's College and Seminary, and today on Grace to You Weekend, he showed you why there's nothing greater to be thankful for than forgiveness for sins through Jesus Christ. The title of today's lesson, Giving Thanks for Redemption. Well, let me turn the corner here. As you think ahead to the Christmas season and the unbelievers that you'll be spending time with during the holidays, a reminder that Grace to You has a couple of books that could be a great evangelistic tool to help folks that you know deal seriously with the significance of Christ's birth. Just ask for these titles, God's Gift of Christmas, and the other one is God in the Manger. Mention those when you contact us. You can call our toll-free number. It's available anytime, 1-800-55-GRACE. That's 800-55-G-R-A-C-E. Or place your order at the website, gty.org. Again, gty.org. Both God's Gift of Christmas and God in the Manger are affordably priced and shipping is included free with your order. Call to order right now at 1-800-55-GRACE. Or go to the website and click on the links for these books right there at our homepage. Just go to gty.org. Let me also encourage you to write to us and let us know how this program has helped you, how God is using it to help you apply His Word to your life. You can send an email to letters@gty.org or write to Grace to You Weekend, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. And keep in mind that Grace to You is listener-supported. If you're led and able to help us take God's truth to spiritually hungry folks throughout the English and Spanish-speaking world, you can make a year-end donation as you write Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412, or call 1-800-55-GRACE. And now for John MacArthur, I'm your host, Carl Miller, reminding you to see Grace to You Television Sundays on DirecTV, Channel 378, or watch it online at gty.org. Then do join us next time as John continues unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, here on Grace to You Weekend.